Today on Vox Talks Economics, the two-way link between innovation and inequality. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics. So remember, subscribe and follow us on Instagram as well. We've spoken in the past on Vox Talks Economics about how governments are desperate to create innovation hubs or attract tech companies to kickstart economic growth. But innovation has consequences beyond that growth because it creates winners and losers. A new discussion paper from CEPR examines the impact of innovation on inequality and inequality on innovation too, and suggests policies so that creative destruction and social mobility can go hand in hand. Richard Blundell of UCL and CPR is one of the authors, and I've come down to his palatial office down at the Institute for Fiscal Studies to talk to him about it. Richard, first of all, in the short run, will innovation always create inequality?
Yes, if you look at the winners, it's the business owners, the innovation owners, and can be the skilled workers, the scientists. So typically those who already have higher incomes, and it's going to increase those incomes. But it doesn't have to be so much increase in inequality, and it doesn't have to last for too long. But I think it's inevitable that there is some inequality. I say the word some, it doesn't have to be too much. And if we have the right institutions, regulations and policies in place, we can minimize the impact on inequality.
For this process of creative destruction to work well, so that it's a temporary inequality, what institutions also need to function well?
We'd like it to be a temporary inequality. In fact, the kind of theoretical foundations of it stresses, in theory at least, that it should be temporary because the gains to the innovators last as long as the next entrant comes along and takes away the rents from that innovation. It's great in theory. It doesn't always work in practice. So what is the process by which it doesn't work? Let's think of that first. So an innovator, a Google or an Apple, if you want, thinking of new tech, but there are many other examples in products, in processes of innovation. Once you've innovated, you're going to get a stream of rents. And it's very attractive to, of course, protect that stream of rents. And of course, those stream of rents puts you in a position of power, market power in the product market, and perhaps power in political circles and lobbying circles to be able to protect your position. What are the institutions that give enough return to the innovator, but also encourage new entrance? It's not just competition policy, by the way, it's institutions. But let's think a bit deeper than that. What is it that creates innovators? I'll come back to this. But innovators come from too small a group in society, we've found. And this is a theme of the research. If you look at where innovators come from, they tend to come from parental backgrounds that are already wealthy. What's going wrong here is we're just not getting the innovations from a broad base in society. So we have too little innovating going on. We have too much, potentially too much, capture of the markets by the existing innovators. And this is where you think of a broad set of policies that are about competition, about social mobility, and about innovating and about entry that can really shake up this process. But it's hard to do. Remember, innovators will do their best to keep out entrants. That's a general theme. You know, look at the amount of money that a Google, for example, spends in Washington, D.C., in Brussels, on lobbying. It's huge sums. And some of that is about processing information and new ideas, but a lot of it is about protecting their position. And the key here is to think through new policies that deal with that.
But the rewards to successful innovation now are spectacularly high, certainly for some individuals. Those organizations have a lot of power, a lot of lobbying power, as you say, captures a real problem. So is this the evidence that the rewards are perhaps too high and the firms are too powerful for our institutions to work well?
Yeah, I think many of the institutions are there to do what we need. It's just, you know, technology and the world of innovation moves on very rapidly, remember. Hey, just think about what are the new innovations at the moment and how difficult it is to think through policy and institutions to deal with the capture, to deal with excess returns, if you want to think of it that way. Think of tech companies that have an innovation which has network externalities. Breaking up these networks is not really the way to think of competition policy and encouraging entrance. In fact, the whole benefit of some of these technologies is the platform, is the extent of the market, is their size, whether it's Uber, whether it's Google search, whether it's Apple, or whether it's Facebook. The gains to the consumers are, in fact, by having a lot of people on the platform, by having a large size. So this opens up a completely new way of thinking about competition policy.
So, Richard, is the solution to this in competition policy a re-examination of it? And we've talked before on Vox Talks at John Van Rienen and Thomas Philippon and Christina Caffara, and they all have strong views about how competition policy should work. Not the same view, actually.
Yes, I think that there's a role for competition policy, but it's not the only thing. You know, these firms, you can look at these firms in different ways. And I think there's no question that some of the big firms like Google, Apple and that have produced important technologies that improve our lives and improve our productivity. These are not just markups that are exploiting consumers. And so we have to rethink that. These technologies are important, but it's also important that we encourage entry and new competition here. The two things I think of that are rather new and difficult here are the one I mentioned, which is the network externality and the idea that breaking up is not really the solution here. It's just making sure there's plenty of contestability in the market and there's always entry there. Not just the possibility of entry, but actual entry. This is a point that Jean Tirole makes in his work for the Deaton Review, by the way, that it has to be actual entry. If the entrants are always acquired by the existing incumbents, that's not going to work. And that's where that point about rethinking acquisition policy and competition there. The other is the global nature of companies here. That's not a new thing particularly, but there really are global firms. And so coordination is absolutely central here. That's a common theme, by the way. Of course, if you were asking me about tax policy, coordination is absolutely central because most of these companies are global. And it's the same with competition policy. You should think of it that way. But there are other policies in society, by the way, that can encourage innovation and encourage entry, which we do far too little to foster. And I can come back to those later, but there's a broad set of policies. We're just not getting the innovators and the new ideas and the new entrants that we need to keep productivity up and to keep social mobility up. That's the challenge, I think. It's not just the existing companies. It's the way the institutions right across society, not just competition policy, that need to be reinvigorated, really, to make sure these existing innovators are challenged. Where they continue to be successful, they should stay there. After all, they're delivering good technologies and good ideas, but they should always be a threat of a new entrant there. And that's where we need to really think about policy.
A lot of things that you're saying here, the narrow background of the people who do go into innovation, that maybe the small number of educational institutions they come from. Does this mean that it affects the type of innovation that gets done? We're innovating on too narrow a front?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Tim, on thinking about innovation and who are the innovators. There's, of course, some great studies on this. Women innovators think of different new innovations. So who does the innovations matters. Innovators that come from top income groups innovate in different ways from those that come across society. So it does matter. How important that is, I'm not really sure. What I'm really sure about is that we need to get a larger set of innovators. What's interesting about the research in this paper is that whether we look at the US or a country like Finland, we see the same kind of thing happening. And that is that parental background and parental income is really key. And in a sense, the experience of children. There's work that shows that understanding the process of innovation and being part of it early on in your life is very important. So that's one side of it. Parental background matters because it just takes a huge amount of effort to get into innovation. The big result really, which is a no-brainer, is that education offsets that heavily. And so the right kind of education and the right kind of skills are really the central policy here. So it's not just competition policy, mm-hmm. it's doing that. And there's some really remarkable work that is pointed to in this paper that looks at the role of education in overcoming those large effects of parental background, especially in Finland. And Finland's had some success in innovation and social mobility. So I think there's a huge amount to learn. And it's for all the good, you know, because we just have this productivity problem that we need to get over. I don't want to go further, though, without thinking about the downsides of innovation and entry.
Yeah.
And I think that's important. Let me point to a couple, not just inequality at the top and possibly too much of it, unless you can get this creative destruction going, but also the geographical nature and the industrial and sectoral nature of the losers and the winners. One thing that we saw in the UK was as we opened up to international competition, we did a study here that showed that opening up to external competition had a big effect on innovation, but only among the frontier companies.
Mm-hmm.
In industries where there was lots of laggards, if they're sufficiently behind the frontier, they were just knocked out. You can see that. And when you realize that laggard firms and laggards parts of industries are often co-located in a geographical area, what you can get if you're not careful, and we see it, of course, is geographical pockets of deprivation, which are often come from the impact of innovation and technology. And we kind of all know that. I think geographical inequality is really important. And when we think, of course, of the importance now of leveling up, that's all part of this, which is, in my view, an even bigger challenge.
Yes, I was reading the Leveling Up white paper recently, and one thing that is in that is a plan to establish hubs for innovation. And it did strike me that it really matters where you establish those hubs, doesn't it? Now, we are at the Institute for Fiscal Studies, so I suppose the question is, if we do create inequality through innovation, and that inequality is a worry, maybe we should be thinking more about how we tax the innovators. Do we tax them enough? Do we tax them fairly?
Yeah, that's a great question. And of course, we think about that all the time. You know, it's tempting to think that we tax them too much because you think...
They think they're taxed too much.
Of course. All of us think we're taxed too much. but if you think about it a little bit, it's not completely clear. What we need is smart taxation, not less taxation.
Yeah.
And actually, if you look at the UK and many modern economies, we tax capital at the margin, at least, way lower than labor and effort. And that just doesn't seem right. What we need to do is focus the tax system and the incentive system on things that are related to innovation, not just the stream of profits. And we can do this much smarter way. We shouldn't have lower rates of taxation on dividends and capital gains than other forms of remuneration. We know what happens there. People just shift their incomes into those sources of remuneration. What we need to do is better align our tax incentives with those things that are complementary to innovation, whether it be R&D, whether it be skilled education, whether it be, as you said, the hubs around higher education and universities, which have been extremely successful, by the way, in creating innovation. So I think it's not that we tax too much, it's we don't tax in anywhere like an effective way when it comes to growth and innovation. We've pointed this out, by the way, these points for a long time. And maybe the point I mentioned earlier about the lobbying of powerful groups that have done well out of their existing innovations and successes in business, of course, they have an incentive to lobby for lower general taxes on their incomes. And I think we have to bear in mind that what we want to do here is encourage innovators and innovation, not just reduce the tax on profit streams.
It strikes me from a lot of things that you're saying here and what's in the discussion paper as well, is that you think that maybe innovation policy is too narrowly focused and that we think about how we encourage innovation, but not how we generate it using things like education. What more should we be doing? How much bigger should we be thinking?
Well, I think the gains from thinking bigger are huge, by the way. when you realize the small section of society where innovations come from or are allowed to develop, perhaps is the better way to think of it, the ones that get developed, then you realize that if we could open up the ideas and in potential for ideas and innovation from a broader base in society, then we could get back in business in both terms of social mobility and productivity. But it's a hard call. Remember, this is, you know, in a sense, how do we broaden that group? There's no question it could work. There's good work we report in this discussion paper that shows that if we can enlarge the group of innovators across society, then the potential for social mobility and growth is huge and important, whether that be in gender, different groups, spatially, all those things matter. So we know that. And so how best to do it? Things come together in group. You know, the idea of agglomeration is very important here. And it comes up in the debate on leveling up. If you just build a new warehouse in one area or an incentive for business in one area, that's really going to go nowhere, because the idea of agglomeration is you need skilled workers, the right kind of firms, and that coming together in one place. Go to a poorer area where there are problems of social mobility. Let me take Grimsby or Skegness, the places where there's fairly low levels of high education.
Yeah, I grew up there, Richard. I know very well. Yeah.
Well, it's quite interesting. You left. Not only is there lower rates of higher education, but among the higher educated, at least half of those leave. So we've got areas which are left behind by educational flight. And just getting a business or a government department to move there really doesn't acknowledge the way agglomeration works. Mm-hmm. We've got to think about education flight, and we've got to think about the right combination there. There's spectacular gains, and we certainly need them, but they come from thinking, as you said early, much more broadly about innovation policy than, say, just an R&D tax incentive or a change in competition policy. It's a much broader look at the way society operates. And in my view, it's one of the key things you need to look at when we're studying how to address the concerns of inequality. And of course, that's a theme we're looking at here in some great detail.
Easy question to finish off, Richard. And it's our tradition on Vox Talks to make our interviewees policymaker for the day. And so I'm going to put you in charge of innovation policy. What's your signature policy on this?
Okay. The signature policy on this would be to recognize the role of entry, I think. I've learned that. And to recognize the role of increasing the pool of potential entrants and to think around that. So there are two parts to that: getting the right education and skills in place, thinking about entry into innovation and new productive ideas. That's one side of it. The other side is just rethinking competition policy to make sure that those who do innovate don't capture excessively either the market, the idea, or the products. And this is a long-term thing, but if I was minister here, I'd set up a group to think about those two things together, not one thing one side and education policy on the other side, but to come together and think about how those interact. I think that's very exciting. There's a lot of academic and policy research going in on that, but it's really the key to the future. Without this, we're going to be stuck in this low productivity, low social mobility equilibrium that none of us want to be in.
Well, if anyone's listening that can swing it, they could do worse than give you the job if you want it.
Thank you, Tim.
Thanks, Richard. The paper is called Inequality and Creative Destruction. It is discussion paper 16867, and the authors are Richard Blundell, Javier Jaravel, and Otto Toivonen. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. Every week, we bring in the most important latest research. If you want to know what you're going to be reading in journals 18 months from now, listen to Vox Talks Economics Today. And wherever you get your podcasts, you'll find us there. So go ahead, subscribe now. If you want to know what John Van Rienen or Thomas Philippon or Christina Cafara think about how we regulate innovation, for example, or if you want to just hear interesting people say interesting things about any other type of economics, well, when you subscribe, there's always a Vox Talk waiting for you.